Joining us on the line, Luba Maeki. So, Luba, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard. Very well, thank you.
Good. So I've been chatting to David Abramson. He's in studio, and we're talking about Holocaust education, how to talk to our children about a national trauma. But in fact, it what I've been saying the way through this conversation is that it actually pertains to any trauma that people might have suffered on a national level. Of course, it can also be a family trauma, but what we're talking about here specifically is how to do that. And the story that I told a little bit earlier around Johnny Clegg was he told me in an interview that one of the reasons that he couldn't identify with his Jewish community so strongly was because there were six kids that were studying around Judaism in Zimbabwe, and they were taught by a Holocaust survivor. And this person gave them each sort of the responsibility of a million Jews and said, well, there are six of you, 6 million Jews were murdered. Each of you carries the responsibility of a million Jews. And he couldn't cope with that. That was one of the reasons he said he just found it too much. And of course, within the Jewish community, this is an issue. We've all got our national traumas, but of course, within the black community in South Africa, there is the whole history of apartheid. How do you think that we should be educating children, and especially black children, about what went on, the privilege of freedom, but without making them too burdened by the enormity of it all? What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, what I was saying, Howard, is that personally, I found it a lot simpler to deal with personal trauma, and I can relate to that, and the emotions are more real. And I found with a more corporate national one, it's a lot harder to deal with. And if I look at, say, myself versus my children, and I would imagine in some ways it might be similar for the Jewish community, that if you were alive during the time of the Holocaust, or you had somebody in the family who was personally affected, it might be stronger, the sentiment and the trauma. So if I look at my kids, the way they relate to black suffering and apartheid is very different to how I relate to it. And I think part of the challenge in the black community is we haven't come up with a clear idea how we'll relate to it. So it's kind of you relate with it how you see fit. And so it varies from family to family, and it varies from theme to theme. So for instance, if we talk about land, or if we talk about whatever issues, so there are certain triggers that will kind of take you back, and they'll take me back, but they won't take my kids back, because for them the experience is based on what they've heard. And so what I've tried to do, for instance, is I had to make my kids watch a lot of documentaries and movies, because when I tried to relate to them, it was just unfathomable. They just couldn't relate to it at all. Now, I understand my kids are all born free, and, you know, they've been to private schools, so they've always been in schools where they're white kids and they can mix and relate freely. It's to the extent that when my daughter, in her university years, when she ran into racism, you know, she literally called me in tears. Her brain just froze. She just couldn't process what was happening to her. And I think that's the tragedy, is that you want to protect your children from being angry at something that they didn't go through, but the legacy of it affects you. So you tiptoe around it, and the biggest problem, I think, is that there's no definitive story. You can't sort of like say, you know what, if you want to understand apartheid, here's a book, you know, go read this book.
I think it's a major problem
on the Holocaust, but in the, in the black experience, it just depends. You know, I was at home this last holiday talking to my wife. Now, her dad was in the PAC, and he went off to exile to, I think, Swaziland, Lesotho. And one of her siblings was born whilst the father was in exile, and the mother had to bury the child without the father being here. But, you know, my wife said to me, her dad never spoke to them at all about his activism in politics and what he suffered. He just kept completely quiet.
And in fact, there's the funeral this morning. There's a funeral this morning of Mordi, who was a guy, Mordechai Perlov. He died at the age of 93, and he suffered the most terrible horrors in his past. Yes. In terms of even finding his parents dead as a young boy, as he had to dig with in the snow with his hands to bury them. His sister was clutched. Horrific stories. he didn't tell the stories. His wife of, I don't know how many years, died about 15 years ago, so he was 93, and she didn't know his story. He only could start talking about it after his death. So it was, so clearly, obviously, his children didn't know. Nobody knew what he had been through until 15 years ago. So you can almost understand this type of trauma. I wanted to read you what Mike Luber, one of our listeners, says. And I think this is very, very powerful. David, I think it might be an interesting way to deal with it. I think Michael says, I think that there's a big difference in educating a child about what happened in the past and making them feel responsible for the correction of a past or circumstances. Torah and a mitzvot, and in other words, Jewish observance, are taught to a child from birth, yet it is only after bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah that the child is responsible for carrying out those mitzvot or obligations. This is how we should teach events of our past. First as stories. Only when a deeper understanding is possible should we add those details.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, it's a heavy topic because you need to deal with it, but your desire to protect sometimes becomes too strong. Mm-hmm. And I think as a child, my view was, trust me to tell me and trust me to be able to deal with it, walk with it with me. That's my plea. So if I can give you a quick analogy. So when I was in high school, I lived in a homeland and homelands were almost proxy to the apartheid government. So you had your own issues playing out. So whilst I was at college, my dad was arrested twice, you know, on two consecutive days, and, you know, taken by the security police from the gate, taken to be so beaten up the whole day and asked where he came from, trans guy and all these issues, and then returned home that day. And all he did when he got home, he rang our family friend, the priest. They sat down, had some whiskey together, commiserated, and then he went back home. And when he went to work, the police arrived the next day, arrested him, and same thing. Now, I never heard the story until much later, because apparently my dad said to my mom, don't tell the kids, it will kind of destabilize them that they might be writing exams. Mm. Now, I got told the story, my brother never got told the story. And so I've kind of sat and said, do I tell my brother? But I know my brother would struggle with it. So even though I was told later, I never bothered telling him. And then I narrated the story to my kids, and lo and behold, you know, as fate would have it, my daughter goes and falls in love with the homeland leader's grandchild. So she sat him down and told him the story, and I was angry because I felt it's my story, and if I don't want to share it, I shouldn't be forced to share it. And my daughter felt that, Dad, it's not your story.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I'm sorry to do this, Luba, but I side with your daughter. It's as much her story.
You know, the problem was the way she narrated it. The poor boy ended up feeling so guilty about his grandfather, who was a homeland reader. He wasn't even born at that time.
I said
to him, I'm not holding you responsible, because when I met him, shame, he's a wonderful boy. And he was like, I'm so sorry. And I said, what are you sorry for? He did nothing. You weren't even around. And that was, I think, my problem was when somebody narrates my story, they can end up making the person hearing it, they can burden them. And in this case, the poor boy was burdened.
Right, I get that. I do get that.
I think that not telling the full story to young people, especially about apartheid, is very dangerous, because in recent years, we've seen an emergence of really radical young black kids. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, because now they've got this illusion that we're all unified. And then the first time that they experience, you know, a racist incident, then they suffer from that trauma, and it cancels out all the things, all the unity that they've grown up with, and they feel lied to. Wow. And I mean, you can even see it with the EFF
supporters.
Here's
my question then. A lot of people want the truth, but my question is, what mechanism do we have? Now that you hear the truth, can you deal with it psychologically?
Such famous because you can't,
I'm not equipped to help you. So many people have said, let's have the sessions, but we need to be responsible and say, how do I help you deal with it? Because if I unburden and tell you what happened, you're going to be a wreck. Mm. And what good does that do? So I need the professional assistance to say, well, okay, fine, let's talk and let's open up.
Well, Luba, I'm going to stop you because we have professional assistance in the studio. David, give me your thoughts.
Well, I think, you know, when we look at the Holocaust survivors and how the generations that have gone after them. You know, we talk about the first generation, and even now we talk about the 3Gs, the third generation, how it's impacted on each generation in different ways. And I think clearly if you've had a trauma and you have absolutely been scarred by that, or any experience that your parents have had, clearly, if they are bringing you up, if they are your caregivers, you are going to be affected.
It becomes encoded in you somehow.
Exactly. And sometimes it's the silence about not talking about it. Sometimes it's the things that aren't said. So I think for me, it's a reality that if someone has experienced a trauma of that magnitude, that they are going to somehow pass it down. But I think it is very difficult to judge people who have been traumatized and to tell them how they should go about doing it. But ideally, we really need to be very mindful on how we go about this. And as we
said, before you run, here's my question. It's easy to deal with in a family context where I know that so-and-so will be here to pick up the pieces. How do you deal with that corporately in a national context? Because somebody sits and now says, let's write about apartheid in the story. Then you've got a whole bunch of kids out there angry, who are feeling aggrieved about something they didn't experience. How do you now counsel and provide support for a nation? That's my problem.
I think for me, it's really about what messages you're giving. And the messages that we can learn and teach ourselves from that. There are so many things we can learn from our mistakes. And it's apartheid, it's about the Holocaust, and we don't have to with our children. And you talk about a bigger mindset, starting young, teach. Children know, they play cops and robbers, you know. They know.
We don't play cowboys and Indians anymore.
Cowboys and Indians.
That's not woke.
not woke, not at all. Mm-mm. But children know from early on, bad and good. And we need to use this opportunity to educate them.
And not be afraid of it.
But in age-appropriate chunks and age-appropriate information. And again, the point is not to traumatize them. It's not to make them feel the anger of
although David, don't pick up on it anyway. I mean, I always write about this. I always speak about this. To me, when I look back at my grandparents, and they both came from Germany, my grandfather would never speak German again. My grandmother always wanted to speak German. Those are two people suffered the same thing and went through the same thing and just reacted very differently. As kids, young kids, we knew that there was something going on there that we couldn't quite put our fingers on.
And very important.
And it wasn't spoken
and
about by my grandparents.
And that's often more traumatic. You know, obviously...
Luba?
Who would you trust to tell the story who wouldn't have a motive? That's the question. Is you want to tell the story accurately, let's say black experience, black suffering. Now, who would you entrust that to, let's say, codify it and tell that story accurately?
The truth is, Luba, I don't think that any story is ever told accurately. I think it's always told through a haze of memory and emotion that affects it. And I don't think it's necessarily bad. But, if I hear the story of my grandparents from my late mother, which is how I did hear it, and eventually because I was just that way, I forced my grandfather to sit down and have some of the conversations. He could only talk about certain things, how he was in Marseille and where he was working and how he was trying to get his, he can talk about that sort of thing. But
I hear you, Howard, but I'm saying here there might be a motive where it might be restitution or something else.
I hear you. We are unfortunately out of time. It is such an important conversation. And I'm actually going to suggest that we continue it in a new and different angle next week, but I think it is that important, and this is a conversation that is so important, not just for Jewish history, but for everybody, for South African history, a way of looking at apartheid, and in fact, every national group that has suffered any form of trauma, this conversation is one that we need to have. Luba Maikisa, sorry for cutting you short. As always, it is absolutely awesome.